So basically, I will tell you about the zone of coordinates in light of the density reconstruction. And the zone of coordinates is what we're working on, but this talk will be basically an introduction to the techniques we're using, the density reconstruction. So let me give you a short introduction. So there are two major questions in cosmology. We have, like, if you look at the sky, you want to basically know what is there. So we want to know the contents of the universe. But we also like to know how the matter and the energy behaves and what kind of densities and physical effects we have. So we want to know more about the dynamics. And as it turns out, if you take together all the observable matter and you put it into the equations of motion, you get wrong results. And different solutions have been proposed. One of them is like the dark energy model. So, for example, if you have there is a very common problem. If you have a spiral galaxy, and you observe its rotation, it turns out that its properties of rotation are different from what you would expect. And one of the explanations is that there is matter around the galaxy, which does not emit radiation that we cannot see, so like a dark matter halo. And this would explain the rotation curves. Other theories include like modified gravity, so we just assume that the Newton law is just true only on the distances where we actually can measure it. So if you perform an experiment on Earth, you of course get a 1 over r squared, but if you have like gigaparsecs, where we have radiation and the whole universe acting, you cannot perform experiments on this scale. And it is possible that gravity behaves in a different way here, and Einstein's general relativity has breaks down or has to be modified according to it. And an interesting technique to find out more about what the contents of the universe are is the so-called density reconstruction, which allows us from observational data to reconstruct the fluctuation of matter in the whole of the universe from the so-called particular velocities, which then can be used to analyze such models in a better way, because many of the models, like modified gravity, there are a bunch of them, and they vary only by very slight parameters, so you want to have like very strong constraints on them. And it's very difficult if you have only sparse data, for example. So here comes in the zone of avoidance. The major problem if you have observational data is that we can't observe all the stars and the galaxies around us, except the ones which are behind our own Milky Way. So if we have our own galaxy here, we cannot see what's happening here, which actually turns out to be like an angular separation. You just don't have data for, or very sparse and bad data. It all, of course, it depends on the wavelengths, but still the zone is quite large. And if you want to estimate, for example, like the background density of measure of the universe, and if you just leave out this zone, you obviously get a completely wrong result, because you have like a huge volume. So this is what we're working on with Mark. We're trying to estimate the effect of the zone of avoidance on the evaluation in such models using the density reconstruction. And let me explain a bit more about the peculiar velocities and the physics of particles. So in cosmology, we assume that we have an expanding universe. Basically, we know we have an expanding universe. And we also know that the universe is homogeneous and isotropic on large scales. That means since it's homogeneous, if I draw like a triangle, and by going time forward, at a different time it will just grow. And the point will have moved this way. And this is characterized by Hubble's law. So as it turns out, the velocity of an object is proportional to its distance, which can be related with the well-known Hubble constant. And if you assume that the object now moves exactly towards the condensation point, such to cancel this velocity, we get actually zero here. So the particle has an additional component, which is called the killer velocity. In this special case, it will be exactly opposite to the expansion. So the total particle velocity is given by the Hubble expansion and the particular part. But how do we measure these particular velocities? And as it turns out, you can measure the velocity of the particle by measuring its redshift. So we know we have like a hydrogen line on Earth, and we know where it should be. And if you look at similar processes in other galaxies, we obtain a shift, a redshift, for example, or a blue shift, depending on its coming towards us or going away from them. And this gives us the two components of the Hubble and the particular velocity. Basically, this is all in a radial direction because we can only measure in the line of sight. And to eliminate the distance, there is a very nice relationship called the Friedmann-Fischer relation, which is known for spiral galaxies. Basically, you put in some information about the galaxy, and this gives you its luminosity, its actual luminosity. And as you know, luminosity is spread over the whole sphere. Luminosity over the distance there has to be constant. We measure the luminosity, we know what it has to be, and we get a distance. So we can eliminate the distance, and we obtain the particular velocity, radial direction. And this is all that is required to find out how the matter is distributed in the whole of the universe. Let's come to the density fluctuations. Let's do some physics of it. So, as it turns out, we can use the Newtonian approximation on the large scales for killing, which is like 1 kiloparsec and below. And in this case, what we do is we just assume that the gravitational field is weak, it's much less than c squared, and from the general relativity equations, you get a field equation. Get this field equation, proper coordinates, and what we basically have to do is transform all our equations into the expanding system, which is defined as a function of time times the expanding distance. And basically what this tells us is that if we have like two objects here, and they're like moving, their proper distance so gets larger and larger, but in the expanding coordinates, they actually stay together. And the expansion itself is just defined by a function of time, which is universal, because the universe is isotropic and homogeneous. And using this relation with this equation, and also using the fact that the particle velocity can be just obtained by differentiating, which gives us A log over A, by substituting it back this here, we get R plus Ax. And this is the Hubble constant. And we basically get back this term. And this is the peculiar velocity, which I will denote by B from now. And using these facts, one obtains the Friedmann equation for the expanding coordinates, which is an equation for the expansion parameter. Basically, to obtain this equation, you just solve this for a constant background density. So you have to group the constant. And in our treatment, I will assume that there is no relativistic background. And this is the background density, and this is the expansion parameter. And what we define now is the so-called density contrast, which is defined as the proper density at some expanding point and time, divided by the background density, which is just the mean over the whole space minus 1. Using this definition, we can rewrite the original field equation with the help of the geodesic equation into the expanding field equation in terms of a new potential phi, And the new potential is justified using catalytic transformation, which is not necessarily the node for the treatment here, but just that you know all the relation between the potentials is given by this. Here we immediately see that we can divide this in terms of our new quantity and the density contrast. That's by dividing by rho v, so we have a rho v times delta. So basically, this is all of physics we actually need to make a vector model. So now we come to the vector models. And the approaches here, there are two different approaches which are quite common. And this is the loss of case, where you assume that the particles just interact through gravitation and nothing else. And for this, you just can write down the distribution of particles as some constant position and momentum space. Which also allows you to write down immediately the density in terms of the particle mass. Then we need a scaling factor of a to the power of minus 3 equals the value, the volume of the universe scale, the expansion, and the integral over the momentum space of. But our function, our density function in terms of our expanding density contrast is also just the background plus 1 plus delta. So from here, you just immediately notice that rho v of t has to be proportional to a to the power of minus 3. Using just this simple assumption and noticing that f has to be a conserved phase space, you can derive a differential equation for the density fluctuation. And a very similar equation we obtain from the ideal fluid case. And in the ideal fluid case, you just need to assume you have conservation of mass and conservation of momentum, and bring it back into the expanding coordinates x. And this is a similar equation. I will not bore you with the details of this, but the important case is what you get. Basically, we have a usual differential, second order differential equation with a Hubble director. So basically, this counteracts to the fluctuation. If we expand, we just erase the whole fluctuation stuff going on. And we have some really huge terms, which for the loss of case depends on the particle distribution, and plus all kinds of nonlinear terms, which we, for our case, will just neglect. Because we have the linear approximation, which is completely fine for all practical calculations. Now, let's have a look at the solutions of this very nice equation in the linear regime. So what we assume to get the linear approximation is that the delta is much less than 1. And also, there are also some subtle conditions, like that the RMS speed of the particle is not large. Otherwise, you get an acoustic oscillation, which you don't want in your solutions. And what you end up with for the possibility of neglecting this higher order term and delta much less than 1 is you can already see it from the equation turning up. The Laplacian of point, and here we can use this equation to replace the field with the fluctuation itself. So let me just. And what we have to do now is just solve this equation. So to consider the solutions, I have first to define the omega parameter. And as it turns out, what you can do is you can integrate out the first Friedmann equation to give you the second representation of the form. Curvature curve here. This is just the second constant of integration. And he defined this to be equal the omega parameter. So what is omega? Omega, as we see from these equations, is nothing more than the background density divided by h squared divided by a over 3 pi g. And what is this term? If we consider the Friedmann equation of this form, and we just say this term and this term is 0, so this is called an Einstein-Sitter universe with no pressure, no background density, and constant curvature. We immediately see from here that h squared divided by this term is its background density. So omega defines the mean background density in terms of a very simple model of constant curvature and a cosmological constant called the Einstein-Sitter model. And this is very very nice because we can represent just our universe as a deviation from this in terms of the metric fluctuations. Now we can solve this exactly for this case. If we assume this is zero, we immediately see that this differential equation can be solved because rho d is proportional to a minus 3. And what do we get then? Let me write the equation down. And the solutions of this equation are just powers of t. So we get a proportional to t to the power of t over 3. And the second condition, just by substitution, is this. Now, using these solutions, we go back to our derived linear density equation, which is in the box on the right board, and just put everything together. And this second order differential equation has the two simple solutions of a growing and decaying mode. Where I will denote this growing time of mode by d1 and this one by, let's say, d2. So they are usually denoted by big d's. So we have solved this very nice equation for the very simple universe. But what happens in the case if omega is not equal to 1? Because this is all for omega equal to 1, which is exactly as we defined omega. It turns out that this can be solved for an open or closed universe, which basically either defines that omega is less or larger than 1, by using a change of variables in the Friedmann equation. So this is basically what you do. You just write a new variable, and you rewrite the Friedmann equation in terms of this variable, where plus is for an open and minus is for a closed universe. So whether omega is smaller or larger than 1. And you get exactly similar solutions, which are very long, and we actually don't need to consider them. So finally, let's have a look how we can reconstruct the density now for any case. And this, what one does now is the treatment here is very nice, but one can go one step back and go to the linear fluid equation and consider the conservation of momentum in expanding coordinates, which in the linear case gives this equation. So we basically linearize not at the end when we got the differential equation, but beforehand. And also the conservation of mass. And we also know the field equation. whether the state imposes on inflation or our rotational field. And as you can see, we can immediately write down the solution for B from all these noise conditions. Just by using a conservation of marks, we get B dt. And for delta, she's substituting in this term. So we get delta squared 5y to 4 pi 0 bA squared. And you can substitute this in terms of the gravitation. Well, we get rid of the divergence by just integrating oneself and having like some kind of homogeneous additional parts where we have just divergence of the zero. But we just assume this to be zero for now, for all practical reasons. And these are the peculiar velocity in terms of the gravitational acceleration, which is not very helpful yet. But we can go a bit further with this. And first of all, let us put this back into here with a bit of algebra. We obtain a differential equation in terms of the gravitational acceleration. And now we have everything in terms of the gravitational acceleration. The good news is we know what it is, because we can solve the Poisson equation directly in terms of delta, in terms of pi. Just rewriting it as a usual integral. What do we see here? We see here that this solution is exactly what we have actually obtained already here. It has a growing and decaying part, and if you can assume that the decaying part is just goes away, we just need to consider actually the growing part for actual simulations. But that doesn't matter because we can actually substitute this in here, and it doesn't matter. I mean, it is no problem to pull out the time part, because this is just a spatial integral. So we know immediately that g is proportional to the background density a and the growing or decaying mode of the solution you're considering. And the nice thing about this is if you put this back in here, you arrive exactly in the differential equation which we have already here. You get exactly this approximation back. So you get the linear approximation back even though you have linearized the equations before you put them together. So that looks good. So what one does now is one derives the solution. In terms of, because we know what g is, we can just substitute this in, but we just know it's proportional. And we get a time derivative on g, which gives you a time derivative on that, which you can divide again by d and put in g back for it. So this doesn't seem to look much more helpful. But as it turns out, this is all you need to know. Because the usual way of rewriting this is defining a new function f where h is just the usual Hubble constant. And f is just the differential with respect to a, which can be calculated for our simple case and for the more complicated case of an open and closed universe. And Peebles and others have shown in the 80s that f is of the order of omega to the power of 0.6. Recent calculations by But other people in like 2005 have shown that you still can use the same approximation for dark energy models by just modifying this exponent to 0.55. So this all works very nicely together. And from here, we also all have, we have all the ingredients we just need. Because we can just put in the solution for G in terms of the fluctuations again. And as we see, this can be overwritten in terms of one Poisson equation. So basically, we have just defined the field for B because we can pull out one gradient here. Just by, let me erase this.
Or it's better to rewrite it.
Yes. What do we get then?
Could you put it a little bit further to the right?
Sorry?
Can you just move it over a little bit to the right? It's kind of getting hidden behind the metal. Just like 5 inches, or something. Half a foot. Ten centimeters.
Sorry?
Just the where you started writing, I can't see what you wrote.
Oh, I see. The pawn protection.
You're going to be safe for posterity.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So let us rewrite this, and this is not yet done here, so question of poker for Philippe. So basically, we have to find the potential for our velocity field. So we have a conservative field. By using the linear approximation, we have just assumed that the velocity field is actually vorticity free, and we can rewrite it in terms of a scalar potential. And this equation, the differential form, is nothing more than the usual equation of the source of the fluctuations on the right hand side. So we have recovered in the linear limit what delta is from this relation. And this is the density reconstruction. So what you can do now is to reconstruct the density. You don't know what this field or anything is. It's you just by start at some point, let's say the observer is here, and you know the particular velocity radial components here around. What you do is you just put in red. Use some statistics to interpolate what the field of velocities will give you at these points, and then you just integrate up. So we say V is just minus whatever the gradient of some new potential in term, some new potential which has not to be confused with the gravitational one. And we obtain just V at some position by integrating from 0 to R of the radial component. And you've got our field, then you recover the tangential components of V directly from this equation. And we differentiate it once again, and we obtain our nice density contrast, which allows us to give the density in terms of the background density in the linear case. This is the procedure of density reconstruction. Do you have any questions?
So what do you want to know the density for?
You want to know the density for because this is the basic answer to the question, what is in the universe? Because on these large scales, you assume that stars and galaxies like point masses, they don't actually exist as point masses because it's a mathematical object. This is just a delta function which is a series which converges to something which is mathematically right, but in the physics world it doesn't exist. So we have actually measure densities. So actually it tells you on large scales what kind of regions of metro clustering you've got from just observing points. So you can learn more about the large scale structure. And I also can show you how well this works on reconstructing. If you just put in an n-body simulation, and what you see on the right-hand side is the actual density, so this is just a cut, and a contour plot, and you can see the nice regions of different densities. And on the left-hand side, you see the reconstructed portion of it using the linear approximation. As one can see, this doesn't 100% give back the results, but you can observe the large-scale structures like these ones here. You cannot reconstruct all the details because this will be impossible. You don't have all the details for that because you would have to like scan the whole space because we don't know what the radial velocities at all points are. When we're integrating up, we would have to like, know all the information on the path, but we just assume we just know some points. And this allows to tell us more about the way the large structures are formed. Okay, then, thank you for attending my talk.
Do we have time for more questions?
So is there something in the abstract about something strange about this method?
Oh yes, yes, exactly. The thing is, it turns out because this is a numerical method, you have to do a lot of statistics, and as it turns out, depending on your data and how well it works or it doesn't work, it can give you wrong results. It can give me like omega metric being equal 1, which is not the case.
Yes. The point is that whenever the most sophisticated version, which is what Andre was talking about, which we're working on, when applied to real data, it gave omega matter 1 in the 90s. And it was at first heralded as a great success, because everyone thought omega matter was equal to 1 back in the 90s. And then they found dark energy, and everyone said, "Ah, must be wrong." And so part of the motivation here is because people gave up, they stopped working on this, and they started discouraging anyone from working on this, whole field, which is silly, because as you see, it's really pretty.
Yes, it's a really nice place.
And it's an alternate way of finding these two. And the fact that they gave the wrong answer is just really not a sufficient reason to stop working on it altogether, because there might be more going on. And there's the thing that we're talking about is the systematic error that Andre pointed out, which is this: you don't see the whole sky. And this is a method, one method where that would be perhaps most deadly, right? Because as Andre explained, that if you're missing a big chunk of the sky, you're trying to do a density.
Yes, you get reactive biasing. You just can leave out a part of the density in this part. But what else you can do is, actually you can consider the nonlinear parts a bit further, and you can get a very nice approximation which is nonlinear in the first order.
So it's the thing about missing part of the sky, favored explanation.
Do you remember? I don't
know. I haven't tried anything particular on that. But it might be a reason. I mean, what basically is done is to get around this. If you have like a zone of avoidance, it's like a really big chunk of missing data.
What's it like, 20 degrees?
Well, if you want to be really conservative and you don't trust the data, you can take 20 degrees, but you get down up to 8 degrees in infrared at different wavelengths.
8 degrees?
Yes, I think 8 was really the best you can do for getting the data. And you know that the universe is isotropic and homogeneous on large scales, so the simplest solution is to get a good background density. For this case, it's just copy the regions from above into the plane. or you can use some statistical observations, which is called a linear filter, where you just maximize the likelihood of your model with some filters and projections. So there are some clever ways of doing this, but you have to be really careful about them because they can give you the result of omega measure equals 1.
Okay, given that age is what it's accepted, what, 70 something?
Yes, this is data of age about 70.
I guess because you're right that if you have a different age, it's really the omega matter age.
Right, because doesn't the CMB, the after all as well, the CMB would confirm a lower age.
That's correct. Because it is what the physical limits are making matter. Sorry, this is inside baseball. The what we're saying is that in many cosmological measurements, the value for omega beta that comes in is not truly delta like it is here. So it's delta times h squared, big H. So delta h appears here, and I think it's delta times h squared that comes in.
And which equation?
So that equation, right? So if you wanted to, so in many other cosmological observables, what the real thing that you end up measuring is delta times essentially h squared. So whenever you say that omega matter here is 1, what you're really saying is that delta h. So if you delta, assuming h is known, then delta gives the omega matter equals 1. And so in these other places, what you really usually have observed is delta omega matter times h squared is 1 if you assume h is the currently accepted value. But if you have some model where you can make h different. Yes. Sorry, any other questions? Cool. All right, let's think on things.